Welcome back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's political commentary.
Yes, we're talking politics nice and early for you on a Tuesday morning. Morena Lara.
Morena.
How are you this morning?
Oh, pretty good. There's still not much happening in politics.
Yeah, it's sort of an interesting one. It feels like a lot of people have got their ear to the ground, you know, heading into an election year, but there's not actually heaps happening in the House.
I do wonder if that's going to be the tone for the year, that everyone's a bit excited or amped up or ready to go, but we're not sure quite what for, you know, or just things don't quite get there, you know what I mean? Like, it's kind of simmering and it never quite boils, but, you know, I mean, anything can happen in an election year, especially with, like, Trump in power. Any kind of exogenous shock, what we call in political science, could happen where it does anything, and, you know, then we've got drama. So who knows?
Yep. I guess top of a lot of people's minds this week is Waitangi on Friday, and we've had an announcement from Luxon that he is going. He's not going to be there for actual Waitangi Day, but he is going to Waitangi, and that means that all party leaders in Parliament will be travelling north at some point this week, eh?
Yeah, and that's a really interesting one, because Luxon has kind of said in the past that he wants to kind of spread the love around, spread the kind of handshaking, baby kissing, honging, whatever around the country on Waitangi Day, and be the kānohi kitea, the kind of seen face in different rohe, basically.
Yeah.
Which I kind of like that on principle. I'm kind of like, that would be quite cool if that was a principled move to around the country and ensure that you're meeting different areas well and not just going north every year. However, it doesn't read or feel like a principled decision, and that's kind of a bit of a concern, because we know that Waitangi and the kind of commemorations of Waitangi Day has been a political hotbed for, 50 years.
Mm.
And so I think politicians really do need to front up there and take it. You know, like, someone might throw a dildo at you, someone might throw feces at you. Hopefully your protection services are onto it enough to ensure that, you know, you can, that doesn't happen. But it's just something that I think that politicians have to do, is front up and to hear these criticisms. I think David Seymour's actually been better at hearing the criticisms than Christopher Luxon in the space. And it is one of those things that's part of politics and perhaps wasn't part of the corporate world as much as fronting up consistently and kind of being spat on or kind of being yelled at different events around the country is something that happens in politics and that people have to deal with. Or, of course, transform the culture, but in this case he is more of a deal-with-it type of prime minister rather than a transformation, the whole system type prime minister. So a few things to balance there, but ultimately it is probably a good thing that Luxon will front up in the north.
Mm. It's sort of an interesting one, David Seymour, because I do feel as though there is a discussion amidst some people that maybe it's better that people like David Seymour don't go, because it just sort of further adds fuel to the fire, and he's quite an inflammatory presence. But what do you think of that? Because I get what you're saying about it's important for all the politicians to front up to those challenges and that feedback. But is there some conversations that are better if David Seymour just doesn't show up?
I mean, this is a really tough thing, because then also in the showing up, they distract from other issues of the day or other potential points. We're also, like, it's been tricky for a lot of people opposing this government to really think about where they should be spending their time and energy, right? Because in political participation, there's only so many people that are able and willing to participate within political parties or outside of them or in communities, and saying the same arguments over and over again to someone who's not listening is also like an incredibly kind of demoralizing experience and can take away from the main kaupapa. So there's so many different kind of arguments back and forth here as to what they should and shouldn't do, and then what the consequences of those decisions could be.
Mm.
But it has been, again, a long-running tradition that prime ministers, ministers, you know, the party leaders, MPs, head to Ratana celebrations at the end of January and then head to Waitangi at the start of Feb, and that is viewed as a kind of almost de facto start of the political year. So, we, of course, Luxon didn't head to Ratana, understandably so, because of the landslide and the weather events, but this just kind of seems like almost like it's not a constitutional convention, it's not that deep, but a kind of like tick box kind of norms of things that you do. So it's balancing all of those things at once, really, and knowing that also at some point we do kind of need to flip norms or change practice, because it's quite clear from rising populist movements around the world and rising distrust that, hey, politics as it's always been isn't serving a lot of people. So balancing all of those giant issues.
I'm sure we'll have a full debrief after Waitangi next week, but I am keen to talk a little bit about the Te Pāti Māori hearing, court hearing, which kicked off yesterday. It feels as though information from the hearing is a little bit hush-hush, or we don't know heaps yet, apart from the fact that Mariamene Kapakingi's lawyer says that the expulsion breached dispute process and tikanga.
Yeah, so basically in this decision, so it's going to, in this case, it's going to the High Court. There was like an interim judgment last year that Mariamene Kapakingi, got it early, would be reinstated to Te Pāti Māori. And so that means she's a continuing member of Te Pāti Māori, and they kind of had to include her in all of those events and bits and pieces and communications and all of the, and parliamentary supports and all of those bits and pieces. So she's included in that. Then we were awaiting this hearing in February. The judge has reserved their decision, so at some point we will get the kind of full decision, you know, the documents, the reasoning, the rationale, the judge's decision and so forth. But for now, that kind of ran in. Mariamene being reinstated is continuing. So I'm not sure when that decision will necessarily come out. A lot of the arguments from what I could see from the limited media reporting were very similar to what we saw play out in the press last year. So, that basically Te Pāti Māori are saying, well, you know, Kapakingi didn't do all the things that she was meant to do and didn't perform and so on and so forth. And also the just kind of implicating her son and all of those kind of things that were playing out in social media and in the media. And Kapakingi's argument is that, as you said, the due process, according to their party's constitution, was not followed. Legally, parties have to have a constitution and are meant to follow those processes, and also meant to follow those processes in candidate selection, which isn't a really important thing. So it's not clear to me right now what's going to happen in terms of the seats of Te Tai Tonga and Te Tai Tokoro, because, you know, we're heading into an election. There's still like 11 months or something. Nine, 10 months. There's still months and months to go. But parties need to make their selection. So it's not clear to me what's happening in those seats for Te Pāti Māori, because it would be the other thing is if Kapakingi gets reinstated, she's then running in for Te Pāti Māori because she's already been selected in that seat, in the electorate. And that's going to be a very awkward thing, really, ultimately, a really awkward thing. And it's going to play out in a really interesting way that won't necessarily be mana-enhancing for everyone involved, and may really point to that whole idea that Te Pāti Māori are unstable or unsuitable partners for government. So I just have no idea what's going to happen. And the moment you ever think that you can predict a Māori electorate, you just can't. That's the thing. I've given up trying to predict Māori electoral politics. Given up.
So it'll definitely be a wait and see sort of situation.
Definitely, and it's a bit of a slow burn. A lot was coming out like last year, very quick fire. A lot was coming out in social media and posts, and something was happening every 2 days, to the point that even I think political junkies like me got a lot of fatigue, including writing on to Party Māori for the textbook and other pieces at the moment, and I just got fatigued, you know. So a lot was coming out, but now we're kind of moving into this letting the courts do their thing and then, you know, seeing what will happen, because ultimately, legally, parties have to follow their constitutions and have to be fair and uphold different principles and, to some extent, tikanga Māori in this case. So we just have to wait and see.
Righty-go. Well, thank you so much, Lara, for joining us for Political Commentary. Looking forward to catching up next week. I'm sure there'll be lots to talk about post-Waitangi. But have an awesome rest of your wiki, and we'll catch you next week.
Thanks, Lara.
Kia ora. Thank you.
Ka kite.
You just heard a bit of Political Commentary.